dresses like a spider. He looks like a bug, but we should all just give him one big hug. Look out, whoa, here comes the Spider-Man.
I mean, I guess I've heard worse, the worst Spider-Man related songs. Have I actually? No. I don't know. That one is
maybe it would have been better if I sang it, but I'm not willing to make that commitment right now.
Oh, give me the lyrics. I'm about to give it some
Oh, okay. Let me
I don't want to say it. Whatever.
All right, poorly sang intros aside, welcome, folks, to another rendition of the Spotter Pods featuring yours truly, Jeffrey Excellence, and alongside me, my one true podcasting Ibo.
Ooh, showing off your Nihongo Wajozu dance.
Showing off my weeaboo-ness.
It is the one and only, I like that. I just came up with that literally just now.
Yeah, nothing like enunciating the two syllables of your nickname.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it works. I'm sure it's worked for some people. Sometimes I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but you know what? It's simple.
Well, maybe it's not a two syllable thing, but Jeff Jarrett's one of his more memorable shticks. You know what I mean? JEFFJR. You get what I'm going with this.
He's double J, got it. He's a talented man, that Jeff Jarrett.
Well, hello, folks. do you see the one when it's like it's a shirt, but then like there's like a stripes cut vertically?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I'm talking about.
Honestly, I ironically love it. Ironically,
I think I do too, because it looks so bad. It looks
it's memorable, but you remember it, right?
It is memorable, along with the guitars. But yeah, anyway, guys, we are the Spotter Pod, the multimedia discussion cast. We talk about multitudes, platitudes. I don't think I'm using that word right. Various topics. I think platitude is like a nice, being nice or something. Anyway, talk about a multitude of things. Wrestling, possibly, as we mentioned, Jeff Jarrett. Anime, video games, and today it will be a movie like we usually do, because movies are not as much time commitment as those other things.
So. And also, true to our namesake, the Spotter Pod, we are covering Spider-Man, but not Tom Holland, not Andrew Garfield, and not whatever shit happened in the 80s, and definitely not the Megazord Spider-Man in Japan.
Oh, man. One day.
But we are covering, for at least for me, the first Spider-Man, or at least the one I grew up with, the Sam Raimi edition, starring Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, I remember watching this as a kid, so you know, definitely a blast from the past. I was really interested to see how it's held up, especially with two other movie Spider-Men to
and also becoming a more distinguished viewer yourself, right? Because when I was a snot-nosed kid, like I didn't pick like up on a lot of the subplots or the subtleties and the storytelling and such.
I'm just like, ooh, they're kissing in the rain. That's weird. That's naughty or some shit.
Platitude, a remark or statement, especially one with a moral content that has been used too often to be interesting or thoughtful.
So it's like, oh, always eat your vegetables or some shit. Like, maybe. Kind of?
Example, he masked his disdain for her with platitudes about how she could believe in herself more.
Yeah. She's like, there you go.
Like little white lies? But hey, before we get into the main topic, let's talk into some news. And I like what you put right here.
Yeah, that's, I feel like it's kind of important. So we are recording this on.
Especially, Sunday, because it happened yesterday. Oh, sorry, August. 2 days ago.
Oh, no, yesterday.
SummerSlam was on Saturday.
Yeah. Isn't today? Oh, no, today's
Monday. Yes.
Oh, what the fuck? I thought.
Yeah,
it was...
right.
Oh, yeah, I did do things today. Okay, anyway. Yeah, 2 days ago, I went to SummerSlam, got my stupid souvenir cup.
Stupid? What do you mean? It's got the big dog and John Cena.
First major pay-per-view, I think, at least of the big four that we've had in Vegas since probably WrestleMania 9, which was in Caesars.
Oh my God.
More like Caesars parking lot. They don't have an arena.
No, I was outside.
Yeah. So I got to see the brand new shiny Allegiant Stadium. Yo, that place is huge. Like, first time
I have not
been
yet.
In NFL. Yeah, first time I've been in an NFL size stadium. Like, I just walked in and I'm just in awe of how huge it is. I'm like, wow. So on the show itself, I was kind of worried that it would be a little too long.
4 hours show.
Also, the seats suck. I mean, I paid for pretty cheap seats.
But it was kind of plasticky.
Very plasticky for 4 hours. And maybe I'll just get the bad stuff out first. So Allegiant kind of is saying, ooh, we're a cashless stadium. Therefore, you know, you can pay with your card or your phone if you have Apple Pay or Google Pay. Hey, okay. Guess what went out in the middle of fucking SummerSlam? The fucking Wi-Fi. So people couldn't, like, literally can't accept cash. Like, they just couldn't do it. Yeah. So, like, the whole stadium wide, no one could buy food. Gump was trying to get some hot dogs, and oh man, we got a free bottle of water and a free Powerade out of it. So hey,
not even food, just drinks for a 4 hour ordeal. Come on,
we got food like before the show. We got a
but nice still, burrito. I mean, like,
it was all right.
You're gonna be sat down for four hours.
No, yeah, we were pretty fucking hungry. But so this is my first time. I was at SmackDown. I think that was at T-Mobile, which is a smaller venue. Then I was also at an NXT show.
NXT, I remember.
Show in New Orleans. But being in a
big stadium, did you see a Samoa Joe's wrestling?
Oh no, I didn't.
Last night? Yeah,
I know. I saw the result of that match because he's doing them.
Yeah,
not to give any spoilers, but anyway. So first time I'm seeing a wrestling show live in a giant ass fucking.
Oh yeah, hint. This is obviously a spoiler cast for those.
Oh yeah, fucking Joe beat Karrion Kross. I'm pretty sure, unless he's holding up the belt for no reason.
Which before the match even started, he just grabbed the belt and ran back to the entrance. Went, yep. He said, "All right, I got my IG a moment. We're good."
So, that place got loud, which is a good sign, I think, for having fans back in for wrestling. Because I think,
I don't think I've ever heard anyone say, like, oh, I really like it when the audience is quiet during matches. Yeah, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, there's moments to be quiet, but, like, you don't want it to be, you know, dead silent majority of the time.
So, and I know maybe some consensus of the overall show may or may not be, like, whatever. But no, I think it was a fan fucking tastic experience. Except for one thing I do have to say, I think it was the women's triple threat for the Raw women's, the one with Nikki A.S.H., Rhea Ripley, and Charlotte, and the fucking people behind me, they were like super like Charlotte marks.
Oh, really? Like,
oh my God. Oh, and there was commenting like, I don't know.
Were they just saying some bullshit?
Yeah, they were saying some bullshit. They're like, yo, Charlotte, beat her ass. What are you doing? You're taking so long. and then when Rhea got a, she did, I forget the move, but she got a cheer, you know, because, you know, people like Rhea. I like Rhea. She's got a great look. She's got a good presence about her. And they're literally like, hey, why are you people cheering? I don't get it. She sucks. Oh, my God. I'm like.
Hey, man, they got to get their stuff in, I guess.
Hey, you know, the good thing I wasn't fucking drinking, because I don't know what could happen if I was really
shut the fuck up.
A little fucking bit. But
do something
that,
about it. Do other something.
Other than that, I feel like the overall pay-per-view was pretty fucking good. I'm going to be biased, you know. I was in that atmosphere. First time I've been in a real hot atmosphere. I mean, fucking Becky came back. That was deafening. I lost my shit.
That was shocking too, how that match went.
No, it really fucking was. We were fucking stunned. Yeah, everyone was like, "I don't know what happened." You know, fucking Edge and Seth Rollins tore down the fucking house. That was awesome with his Edge coming out with his old ass Brood theme. Apparently, because I could hear, because people wrestling fans really like having it be known that they get references and know things from the past. Even if I didn't know that already, which
you know that meme of Steve Rogers when Steve Rogers, I forget what Marvel movie, but he's like, oh, I got that reference. I know you haven't seen many Marvel movies, but like, I think Tony referenced like a movie or something, and Steve's like, oh, I got that. I saw that movie because I was frozen in ice. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was current when I was going on, but you know, that was an awesome match. And Cena Roman, I mean, I got to fucking witness both of those entrances in real life. That I was really excited hearing. Oh man, I should send you the video of like when Cena came out. I lost my fucking shit. Because it's like years of just listening to the theme. And I unironically love his fucking theme.
Right?
It's a big meme, but like regardless of that.
Who cares, bro? I love that shit.
I fucking love it. Lost my shit. Great match. Then fucking Lesnar.
You know, the really interesting thing about that match is Cena got whooped for a lot of it, but like they're really putting over that he just needs to try to pin Roman for three. Yeah. So
the
storyline
that they laid out prior to this, you know, it makes sense. You know, I'm not. Both of you and I are on record on this podcast. You know, we're into just simple storytelling, and they were able to tell a simple story about Roman beat the shit out of Cena, but he was close. I almost got him a couple times, and I really enjoyed that. So. Overall, fantastic experience. I don't know if I want to do another one because, wow, I kind of hate wrestling fans sometimes. Holy shit.
Hey, brother, someone's got to buy the merch.
There were so many titles, too. Like, expensive-looking titles. I'm like, people came out. I mean, I didn't even... I just bought a shirt at the... I couldn't find my...
No, dude, I don't know. I think if you bought a 400... No, they probably upscale it at the venue. So if you bought a $500 title straight off the wall
they're trying to hawk them, too. They're like, yo, check out the title stand. I'm like, I'm okay. I'm all right.
Maybe I was about to say, like, wow, movie. I did not expect that from you.
No, I just bought this cup. It was like $11. A t-shirt.
The plastic?
Yeah, it's plastic. They didn't even give me a top for it.
Oh, really?
They're just like, yo, here's your whatever.
Well, just like how the Wi-Fi went off, I guess all the cup covers were offline as well.
But I saw some kids that had the same cup with a cover on it, so I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on, Allegiant. You should get your shit together. I'm going to leave you a bad review. I mean, it was on the news. I saw it on the news that shit went out. So, it was pretty sad. But overall, still pretty positive experience, so. Hello,
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, once in a lifetime. You know, and hey, until
you know, Matt Stoney went to that.
Isn't that the name?
He's the food challenge.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I didn't even know he was
at SummerSlam.
Yeah. That was a crazy thing. I didn't even know he was he was at least a casual fan of wrestling.
Okay. Yeah, and they had that Olympian guy show up.
Yeah, Gable Stevenson, and then also I'm blanking on her name, but she won the women's Olympic gold for America, bona fide stud. So that was cool.
Yeah. And I kind of liked though how I was kind of worried because another entrance I wanted to be in live for was Nakamura's entrance, but I saw he's not on the card. But hey, we got an entrance
he
anyway.
Came like through anyway.
And I'm like, hey, wait, did he just come? Just tap the end, and he left. And I'm like, oh, hey, you know what? Thanks for letting me sing, because you know. But I missed out. I missed out on doing Miz's entrance because they just showed up in the arena, and I think that might be my favorite wrestling song. I love.
Really? Wow.
Came to play. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I can't. I fucking love it.
But it I wouldn't say that's one of my favorites. But hey, I'm glad you like it.
It's awesome. But anyway, enough about my fun time, weekend times. Let's talk about, or maybe have some lingering thoughts, perhaps, on the last episode we did, which was on Nichi Joe. For me, it's basically just like jokes and segments that I forgot to bring up.
Yeah, throw them in if you want.
I mean, the one that stuck out to my mind was when Yuko, there you go. Yuko gets to class early, and then she's like, no one's here. And just randomly, the Kuwagata. She just does a Beatle impression, and then the teacher walks in. He's like, hey, what are you doing? And she's just, you know, embarrassed for, you know, that's her character arc. It really is just like
being embarrassed.
Secondhand, like, embarrassment, and you feel it. And then at the end, you see Nano just roll out from the curtain because she was hiding the whole time.
Right. Oh yeah. So I remember that she was technically the earliest. Yeah. All right. Let's get into the business of today's episode, Spider-Man 2002, Sam Raimi edition. It's not called that with the 2002 or Sam Raimi, but I'm going to... Raimi. But I'm just going to throw that in there. Also, I want to throw out and put over the Spider-Man PS4 game once again, because the Raimi suit is available for free. Oh, it is. That was a free suit. So God bless Insomniac.
I should go back and get the DLC, maybe. It's been a while.
I think you should. Also, there's the Miles Morales one, so that's kind of cool. But yeah, no, the Sam Raimi suit is available to play in the PS4 game, and I think that's dope, especially for people who are fans of this movie growing up.
Yeah, like this is like the movie that kind of kicked off maybe the
superhero movies. I would say so.
Yeah. Because like before this, you have like the Batman and Superman movies from like the 80s and 70s, or I think 70s, but back in the day. And then like the 90s, I guess is that when they had like the Batman movie we watched? Was that a 90s movie?
Arnold and hold on. I mean, I think the one with Arnold specifically might have been early 2000s, but I mean, I think they had Batman Forever. Oh yeah, Batman Forever was 95.
And the first Christopher Nolan Batman movie, when was that?
That was post 2000.
That has to be after this, right?
Yeah.
Batman Begins.
2005.
There you go. So I think, yeah, this is to me the genesis of the modern superhero movie. And I think this one kind of boils down to it's a coming of age teenage
Batman and Robin, 1997.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the 90s where it's very camp
and like, bat nipples.
Maybe a little bit too comic booky. But yeah, and I think this one tells a more grounded
every Bane times... action figure or every Poison Ivy action figure comes with him. No, nothing. Come on.
I don't want to. You did that for the intro too. I remember that, but I was also like, what do I do with that? What do I say to that? Anyway, what I'm trying to say here is that I think, Spider-Man 2002, Sam Raimi is basically a classic coming of age, teenage growing up story. That also,
even though all the high schoolers / teenagers in this movie look like grown ass people, but hey,
I do think Toby looks younger than I remembered him looking. Because I remember
maybe think of clips of him in the older movies.
Yeah, maybe. Or
like, sorry, not older, but the later.
Yeah, I got what you mean. Yeah, that makes sense. It's basically, boy learns about ghosts or going through high school. He's kind of the loser, and that's
kind of. Man, they lay it on thick. When he was on that bus scene, a nerdy ass girl, said, "Oh, not next to me, dweeb." I'm like, bitch.
Shouldn't it be illegal if a kid is running at the... I know it's very cliche to have the kid is late to the bus, but, like, for real, shouldn't the bus driver... Can't he just, like, stop? Like,
pull over.
Let the kid in. Like, why?
I think... You know about the Catwoman superhero movie?
I know it's even the bad one with Halle Berry.
Yes.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's one of the worst movies of all time, yeah?
And when you put it like that, that means we had to watch it. But the point I'm trying to make here is, like, I think this movie, the genesis of a down on luck protagonist and then becoming, super amazing. This movie was the genesis of those superhero archetypes. And I watched a little quick summary analysis review of the Catwoman movie. Shout out to Cosmonaut. But yeah, no, that's how it starts. It's like she's a barber, I think, and she's smelly and weird, and then for some reason cats look at her, and then she gets cat powers and she becomes cooler. But yeah, it's very similar as far as the base.
Huh.
But not nearly in the level of execution or likability.
I know I'm not super into the comic book lore. I always figured Catwoman was just like really, really athletic. I didn't get that she has
cat. Oh no, I think the writers took liberties with her back, because they're like, oh, Peter Parker got bit by a spider, so that means Catwoman needs to have legitimate literal cat related power genesis, you know what I mean? Yeah
Okay, yeah, we're gonna have to watch that. Yeah, that's just who we are. But and I think it's time to get into some of these themes and tones. I didn't write about tones.
Tonally speaking, they have some really somber moments, like right after Uncle Ben dies and they have their graduation. A lot of lighthearted. Oh, sorry, I was reading that as I was talking, but a lot of bittersweet moments like that, especially at the end when MJ finally confesses to Peter, right? But then he has to turn away from it. Lots of moments like that. And then obviously there's the high intense action sequences when it's Peter versus the Goblin, or high drama, like when Peter confronts the Uncle Ben's killer, that is.
It's a good mix, yeah. You get too stuck into one.
I will say though, like, there was a difference between this iteration of Spider-Man and let's just say the Tom Holland edition of Spider-Man. I would say Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man isn't as, I don't think there's as much humor. I would say there's not moments where I'm just like outright laughing hard, but I would say there's a lot more heart.
Yeah, I guess you know what, I agree with that.
And whatever you prefer, you know, that's up to you. And I'm not saying the Far From Home movie or the Tom Holland movies didn't have heart, but I think if anything, Far From Home does a little better than Homecoming. But the point I'm trying to make here is that Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, what makes it so different is just that sensitivity that you feel in those tender moments. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really do feel like Peter Parker to me is the main character, and Spider-Man is rightfully his alter ego. Like, Peter's character arc happens in those scenes where he's just being Peter Parker, where he's not. And ultimately, yeah, he does. Him being the hero and saving people at the end is kind of like the culmination of what he's learned as Peter in those tender moments of, you know, consoling, or how he starts out like kind of angry at Uncle Ben, who's
angsty,
like, hey, you know,
angsty.
Yeah, definitely angsty teen. You're not my real dad. Oh no.
Like, oh wow. Okay. Said any teen drama ever.
Said any teen. Oh, and then he slowly gets his powers and was kind of wondering, ooh, what do I do with it? And, you know, earn some money, and then tragedy happens. And yeah, I think Toby really shines, in my opinion, in being Peter Parker and less so Spider-Man. And Spider-Man's kind of more like the he's like the persona, the face or the mask that he uses to face life's hardships or whatever the fuck they say. I mean, yeah, that is
break
it.
It's a literal mask, right?
Definitely. That's kind of the whole superhero, superpower motif. That's why they're alter egos, right? And I think that could fit into a theme of how, you know, the masks and personas of both are two main superpower people. How Peter uses his Spider-Man persona as kind of... He you can tell that there's a change when he puts it on. He's more jokey, he's more loose and comfortable, you'd say. I would say he's not as like jokey and funny, quote unquote, trying to be the jokester that Holland might be. And then, or Norman, you know, he just completely changes. It's like, ooh, it's a
William Dafoe, absolute psycho on camera.
fucking great. Or yeah, the Goblin persona slowly kind of, you know, takes over. And that actually brings me a quote that I had that I just was reminded of when, I'm just blanking on his name, his uncle, Ben.
Uncle Ben.
Yes, Ben. I was gonna say Bill. Bill Parker. When Ben says, and it's not even the line, but it's you know, these years are the years in which a man changes into who he's gonna become for the rest of his life. And be careful of who you change into. Kind of thinking the difference between how Peter Parker and Spider-Man kind of become, how they mesh, versus how Norman kind of gets consumed by the Goblin persona, by his hatred, by his, you know, desire to seek revenge and sow chaos. And that's even in the very end scene where he's trying to pretending to be, oh, I'm Norman, I'm the normal Norman, please, Peter, don't hurt me anymore. But even though he was ultimately
Spider-Man,
planning,
stop whipping that ass.
Yeah. Please, I'm just a poor old man. Oh no.
And then that's when he pulls the Ric Flair move and hits him in the dick.
Yeah, the dirtiest. I know, I really like that about Goblin's character. He's not fucking afraid to
lie, cheat, and steal. You ain't cheating, you ain't trying. What's up?
I wrote that down here somewhere about, yeah, lies, cheats, and steals his way to victory.
He does lie, that's for sure. He does cheat. I'm sure if I look at it hard enough, he's stealing some shit. Well, he stole the glider and suit.
Yeah.
I mean, he technically made it, but it wasn't his property. So yeah, he stole that shit for sure.
Yeah, definitely a criminal, that Green Goblin. But yeah, going on from that, personas and masks. I think one of the main obvious themes about this movie is, you know, what it means to be a hero, what it means to wield power responsibly as a way to say that.
Obviously, in any Spider-Man movie, right?
Yeah, you gotta do it. And you know, I feel like most people have the Spider-Man origin story fatigue just because Andrew Garfield also did a origin story. But I mean, this one obviously came first, so I don't.
I mean, at the time of 2002, I don't think people were having origin story fatigue. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. And no, I think it tells a really compelling and easy to see arc where, you know, Peter starts out kind of angsty and rejecting his uncle's advice.
He's more self-serving.
Yeah, self-serving, self-centered. Yeah, and has to learn, oh, you know, my actions have consequences, have deadly consequences, you know, because I remember feeling, when he's telling the wrestling promoter, that's not my problem. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, you tell him, Peter. Yeah, you're right. You got gypped.
He really did. You
know. He did. He did. That's honestly really unfair. That's what makes it so compelling, because, you know, he you could argue, yeah, he was justified in doing that completely because life's not fucking fair. You know, but being a hero means rising above something like that and doing the right thing, using your powers to help those in need. And I think, yeah, there's a reason why I think they wanted to retell that story, because it's just in the second iteration, Amazing Spider-Man, because it's a good story to tell, you know?
They really name dropped the Amazing in this movie multiple times. never heard of that. Superlative amazing. Before the amazing did Spider-Man.
Did they also do Incredible? Pretty sure they did. Yeah.
I'm sure.
I think, but it's like when
they really drop Amazing like very yeah they so frequently. Amazing.
I think that's the word he's most associated with. But you know,
and you know, that's kind of cool because that was the original Spider-Man release is the Amazing Spider-Man, right? So makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. And obviously the way your villain contrasts with that kind of thinking where he tries to recruit Spider-Man. Oh, you know, we are exceptional. We're a cut above, you know, what does Macho say? The cream of the crop.
Yeah.
Rises to the top.
Oh yeah. The cream always rises to the top, brother.
Wait, he doesn't say brother. That's Macho.
I'm sure Macho said brother. Come on.
Yeah, I guess so.
Everybody said brother. Everybody said brother.
Well, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. Everyone else said that too.
No. CC, because Iron Sheik is. Let me tell you something, Gene the Mean. Because he's got to get it backwards.
He's got it. He's a foreigner. Get it? He doesn't speak English as well.
But no, you hit the nail on the head. As far as it's a coming of age and deciding the kind of man you want to be, you have Peter Parker deciding that he wants to be the guy that with great power comes great responsibilities. So he's in the service of others, right? Because that's what Uncle Ben wanted to do. That's what Aunt May wanted to do. And directly contrasting him is, I would say, Harry and his father.
Yeah.
And Harry, like, you know, he's obviously butthurt about Goblin dying, right? But he's also willingly ignoring how Goblin murdered several people and endangered several lives. But hey, Spider-Man's the bad guy in all this, right? But and also Green Goblin, like you said, he wasn't necessarily a teenager growing up, but he was a man that changed under adverse circumstances, i.e., Oscorp closing, and he changed in the sense that I need to do what's best for me. He chose the selfish decision, and by doing so, it's like, oh, anyone in my way, I'll just murder the fuck out of them.
Why not? Yeah.
I can't sell out to a rival company if all those people in the rival company die.
Exactly, yeah.
A great logic right there.
I mean,
hey, no one sought to look at that. No one looked to investigate. Like, I wonder why all these people in this deal died. Who would have motivation?
I just realized, the police don't do a goddamn thing about the Green Goblin.
That's not true. I thought you were about to say the police don't do anything. I was like, oh, they tried to arrest Spider-Man while he was actively saving people in a flaming building.
Once again, proving the world's unfair. But you got to do the right thing. There you go. Anyway, you got any other themes to throw onto the pile?
No, I mean, like, I think you got it pretty square. Peter's designed to be a selfless man, and Goblin chose to be a selfish man. And Harry, who reveres his father so much, and Harry, I think, is also part of that theme, because maybe he's not quite the same extent as Goblin, but the man he wants to be is obviously his father, right? Like, he reveres his father in such a high level. So just like how Peter has Uncle Ben as his role model, Norman, there you go. Norman is the role model for Harry. And we don't really get to see that play out all the way. We will eventually, but they set the seeds for that. And it's still part of the theme immensely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay. Then we're going to maybe dive into some of these characters and or arcs.
Yeah. Actually, I'm glad you have MJ first, because it also her story actually kind of does. I mean, she dates like two different dudes in the movie. That's cool. Whatever. Who cares? But
that's cool.
I mean, normally in the movie, it's just like one. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, she doesn't really break up with Harry, does she?
I think, I don't know.
There's not an on-screen one.
It's assumed, right? It's assumed.
I guess so.
But, you know, some people might just look at that and be like, oh, she doesn't really do much in the movie. Like, she's just there as the female protagonist. But I think they tail end her at the end, and where she says that, whereas Peter and Harry are deciding the men they want to be, MJ decides in herself, like, she is fine as she is. Like she says in her final lines with Peter, she says, when she's with Peter, then she's okay as who she is. She doesn't have to be any more or any less. Like, she doesn't have to be the arm candy for Harry Osborn, right? Or the arm candy for Flash, right? She could be a pursuing actor who has to pay bills by being a waitress, and that's okay, because Peter believes in her and such, right? Like, that's she's still a part of that coming of age theme.
Yeah, no, yeah, I definitely think like her realizing, hey, you know, my relationship with Harry's kind of shit. He's never really happy. Well, Harry's never happy ever in this movie. I think he's always just looking like,
yeah,
it's kind of dour, and clearly, you know, he's like, oh, why didn't you wear the black dress? To fucking, because you're
wearing a dress. He's wearing like, a dress, bro. Who gives a shit?
Jeez. And yeah, her choosing, hey, you know, the money and prestige isn't worth being with someone who doesn't appreciate me for who I am. And clearly she does have that with Peter. I think did a nice summation on her character arc, yeah.
Unfortunately, her role in the three movies in total is, you know, damsel in distress and screaming, which, you know, that kind of sucks. Like, you'd hope there'd be like a change in that, just to give it a fresh coat of paint, right? But not much you can do about it now.
I think MJ in the MCU, I think she got kidnapped like once, maybe. Probably. I don't remember.
Not in the first one. In the second one, I wouldn't say she was kidnapped, but her and a bunch of other characters were in they were in a death-defying situation.
Oh, wasn't that the never mind, I'm not going to try to remember.
It's the Mysterio fight when, like, the robots were coming into a room and stuff.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway, I think moving on to the first Osborn, or Osborn the second, Harry. Yeah, like, as I pointed out, yeah, I think he is the foil. I think both him and his father are foils to Peter. Maybe Harry's the foil to Peter, and then Osborn or Norman slash Green Goblin is the foil to Spider-Man. That's how I like to see it. So Harry's like his best
friend. No, see, Osborn is the foil to Ben because they both die in front of Peter. I like the way you die. Yep.
Okay.
I'm sticking with that.
Anyway, so Harry, yeah, he's kind of supposed to be, oh, he has everything. He has the money. He's got the girl. But as I said, he never looks happy in this movie.
It's never enough. To be fair, that's how his father treats him.
And I even kind of like how in the scene where he tries to, ooh, Peter, you know, my dad can give you a job. And Peter's like, oh, no, I want to do stuff on my own way. And Norman was like into that. He's like, oh, you know, I really respect that, you know, about a man. And I can like feel like Harry is there, who obviously is taking salt from his father. You know, he's like, ooh, oh, no, dad. What about
me, dad? I'm your son.
You know, it's like, well, stop being like a father.
Hey, remember when Harry swooped in on MJ and used all the same lines that Peter told
Harry?
Oh, yeah,
I forgot about those. Oh, I almost forgot. Yeah, that was like, oh, come on, man. It's still, come on. And yeah, ultimately swears revenge on Spidey to come back later as a villain in 3, I think. Because 2 is all about Doc Ock. Well, I think it's coming back for, who isn't coming back for that new movie?
Man, I'm so excited. I don't know. I haven't seen. I saw there was a leak, but I didn't even get to see the leak. So
I'm not going
to
touch that. I'm just going to watch a trailer, maybe, when it comes out.
It's like, I'm going to watch it right now and leave a whole minute and a half of dead time.
Yeah. I'm sure Harry expands on it more when he comes back. But yeah, he's kind of like the foil to Peter. And then, as we said, for Norman slash Green Goblin, he's also a foil. He's a great villain, I think. Fucking Willem Dafoe is... I think he's fucking great. I know some people might say it's like overacting or it's too hammy.
I disagree. I love the insanity because Green Goblin is an insane character.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go. Like when he just starts talking to himself in the mirror, the way he's able
to. And he's
like,
talking
switch
to the mask and he's crawling at it.
It's like, oh, this is...
yeah, in it's my mind. So
what is that? The crawling
in mind. In my mind, I like to think they did that in one take because William Dafoe can just be so crazy on
great.
A switch. And they're like, all right, I don't think we could do any better than that.
Like, yeah, the way he's able to switch between the two personalities, how he goes from just fucking chaotic evil to what's the word? Pathetic, quivering man. Great performance. I think he's able to play that, you know, dual split personality thing well. And as I said, you know, kind of at the end of the day, he gets consumed by the goblin persona.
Yeah, I think that's highlighted, especially when he says some line, when he's acting as if he doesn't know what happened to the Bourne members who were in way of the deal that got murdered. Just real sloppy police work there, but hey, whatever.
That kills me, not realizing, God, What about this other guy? How could I mean? Spider-Man never kills people. Like, what the fuck?
I mean, I guess he kind of kills that one robber guy.
Oh yeah,
he kills him. He kills him in the way that it's like, oh, you're a Spider-Man villain obstacle, so you have to die on your own terms, but not me directly murdering you. Keeping that in mind, how the carjacker died was he fell over a pipe. And fell to his death. Yeah. So I'm like,
so you can have Peter feel guilty, but you don't feel like, oh, he actually did it as much.
Yep. He had that half commitment of almost murder.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we're going to go into Spider-Man, but is there anything else you want to go on, Norman, before we move on to Mr.
No, sir. I love how William Dafoe is a crazy person on camera.
Awesome. Me too. So yeah, Spider-Man, Peter Parker is the everyman, kind of low on his luck protagonist who, you know, is able to learn a valuable lesson about.
Really low on his luck.
Yeah.
Can't even catch the bus. Gets tripped when he gets on the said bus.
That's crazy. Anyway, but as we said before, it starts off kind of selfish and angsty, and he is able to learn over time, you know, that, hey, you know, that I gotta do something, have a responsibility to use my power.
God, how just like, yeah. Actually, hey, we say responsibility in the Spider-Man podcast, we should just take a drink.
That makes me kind of want to re-listen to some of those. Maybe I should. But, you know, learns to eventually just, you know, maybe
do it. We covered it. We covered his arc pretty well in the theme. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And talking about the whole persona thing. Yeah. I think
deciding the man who he wants to be.
And I do really like Toby's performance here. Like, there are times when he comes off as very, like, awkward, you know, especially with interactions with Mary Jane. But at the end of the day,
just awkwardly staring at her.
But, you know, he's able to get the sincereness of his words, like, you know, oh, you're going to light up Broadway. And
I think that was that's the key word, man, is that sincerity. I think that's the defining trait of this version of Spider-Man, is that sincerity. And honestly, I think that's why this version of Spider-Man is a lot of people's favorites, at least the people that have seen it.
Yeah, you want to weigh in on that one? Or
I might
prefer Toby over Tom Holland. Not gonna lie.
What do you mean, not Andrew?
I saw that movie once, and I don't remember anything except for Lizard is a.
Oh, you didn't see Doc Connors?
I didn't see. No, the actor. He's a what's his name? He does like comedy.
Oh,
that guy.
I don't know his name, but you don't remember in Amazing Spider-Man 2 Jamie Foxx became Electro and his tooth gap got healed with electricity?
Is that a is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't he coming back? Aren't they bringing him back too?
I don't know.
He's a big name. Jamie Foxx is a fucking big star. So, you
know, I'm just saying, like, whoever's writing this script, God bless him. Well, look, it's kind of weird because, like, I really love the fun that Tom Holland brings on screen in his version of Spider-Man, because I feel like that wasn't really necessarily captured in the other two, right? And I'm not trying to just dump on Andrew Garfield here. Like, I think if anything,
no, he's not, I don't think he's a problem in that movie.
No. Yeah, I agree with you. But point I'm trying to make here is just having that sincerity, those sincere moments that Tobey Maguire has. Like, for example, like I mentioned earlier, after that graduation when he's just sitting in his room and crying. Like those are moments you walk away with, right? But I think once Tom Holland's time is up, I think that's when I could make a fair decision, really.
Your time is up. My time is now. Yeah. Your time is up.
Tom Holland is the John Cena of Spider-Mans. You've heard it here first, folks.
Something.
Your time is up. My time's now. You can't see me. My time is now. It's the franchise. We're shining now. Can't see me. My time is now. No.
Fucking love the Super Mario Brothers 3 logo he had.
It was dope. It was dope. I
was like, yeah, he's doing the animation.
I would actually buy that shirt if I could.
I'm wondering, like, you can't sell that shirt before the pay-per-view, right? But, like... And like all the shops were closed too when we were leaving, so I don't know.
Oh really?
I guess you got to go to WWEshop.com tonight after Raw to buy it.
All right. Anything else on Spider-Man?
I don't know. I think we're good to move on to our notable moments.
I just also want to point out for MJ, maybe macking on the dude you like at a funeral is not a good idea.
Yeah, it's a. Kind of bad timing for sure.
I think you could have done, like Katsuragi Kama would say, there are better things you could have done for your conquest there.
Yeah, no, give him the time to think. I'm pretty sure, like, yeah, he doesn't end up with her because he's like, oh, I she'll just get targeted again, right?
Oh no, I think that's exactly why he doesn't end up with her.
Just making sure, because remember as a kid, I'm thinking, like, how come? Why doesn't he kiss her again? I don't get it. I'm 5.
But, you know, when I was a kid, everything I remembered from these movies, I don't even remember any of the dialogue.
Yeah,
I just remember
the dialogue.
Yeah, all definitely the, not just the dialogue. Scenes. Scenes.
Specifically, I guess notable moments for me, just real quick.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Goblin kills the board members and they turn into skeletons. That freaked me out as a kid. Metal.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa. And wow, those skeletons look terrible. We'll get into the CG later on. But any questions other than, you know, where the fucking, where's NYPD? Where are they at? What the fuck? What are they doing?
Just one, honestly. So when Norman stole the air suit and the glider, and then they report it to him the following morning. Like, why doesn't anyone check the cameras or mention, oh, our $1 million suit has gone missing? And, oh, why is Dr. Strom dead? Why don't we investigate this incident? Everyone just like, oh, he died and moves on. Oh, our $1 million projects are missing. Oh, well, who the fuck cares?
Like, how did they just like, oh, I guess he committed suicide or something? Or
yeah, he physically threw himself against a rack so hard he died.
No one, because he's not important, so no one cares about his murder.
Back to formula.
That's fucking funny.
It is funny. That's a memorable moment to me.
It's like, because like,
yeah. You know, I remember when I was younger, I was like, who would actually act like this? You know, like, this is foolish of a CEO type to act like this. But after working a few jobs, I'm like, okay, this is actually plausible behavior for a certain higher up.
Power, with great power comes great insanity. Oh,
I thought you were about to say absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Oh, no, we didn't do that movie yet. We didn't do that one yet. I forget, is that even in the prequels, or did he say that in the original trilogy? I don't even know. I think it might come from the original trilogy, now I think about it. Maybe like the third movie.
Oh, and then some other questions I have. How come, and this is because I'm a big dumb wrestling fan, right? So I have to throw these questions out there.
Oh boy,
you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? You know exactly what I'm talking about, right? So when Bonesaw, a.k.a. Macho Man, but when Bonesaw threw that dude out of the ring, how come that was the end of the match, right? Was it a over-the-top contest? Or was it like Bill Watts era, where if someone gets thrown out the ring on purpose, then they get DQ'd? But then how come Bonesaw was declared the winner, right? And then another point, when Peter whoops Bonesaw's ass, and then why do they count 1, 2, 3? And then is it meant to be like a knockout? But then he goes into his office and like, the stupid promoter guy's like, yeah, you pinned him 1, 2 within 3 minutes. I'm like, what? His body wasn't even on him. What do you mean he pinned him?
The legality of like just asking randos. Like, I know sometimes they'll have like local talent, you know, show up for like Raw or SmackDown. But like, I don't think he didn't ask for his cage match. So don't put him in a cage.
Yeah, that's another thing. They didn't include cage match in the stipulations.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh God.
But how, like, all I'm saying is, how did he win the match 1, 2, 3 if he didn't? He literally wasn't even physically on him to pin him.
It's just fucking weird. It's weird. Wrestling in other media and other movies, great.
Okay. Unless it's, what's it called? Oh, man. Ready to Rumble. Yep. Yep.
Oh, man. I can't believe Spider-Man just fucking shot on Bonesaw right there. Damn, just fucking murdering him. I'd have loved to be like, hey, what the fuck are you doing?
This isn't how this is supposed to go, brother.
Didn't you read the contract? Okay. Oh, wait, he signed something. Whatever. No, that's a fun ass scene.
It was, like it was like a verbal agreement, which I didn't understand. Like, why would you not have people physically sign it? Like, she's like, do you sure you want to do this? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, bitch, ain't you even going to ask for his name? It's like, legally binding?
It's like what people think who don't watch wrestling think wrestling's like. I think that's kind of what it's
You know what? Maybe. You're,
like,
you
oh,
know,
yeah, people just getting killed. I don't know the rules. There's no rules. Yeah, cages. That's you know what?
Sometimes
do.
It is like that. Sometimes it is like that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, sometimes notable moments. Like, never mind, the most notable moment ever. I wouldn't want to fight me neither.
Oh, yeah, that's a good line, too. Thank you.
I almost opened with that. I kind of wish I did.
I love that one.
Bully McGuire.
Fucking, yeah, that's great. Good stuff. But other stuff, I talked about this quote about changing into people. Oh, when he's sketching the alternate costumes. I like some of those ones.
Some of those were like a reference. It was like Black Widow, Spider-Man.
I'm sure there's like a lot of references that if we were more into the comics, we'd recognize. I'm sure.
Those valet girls on the way to the ring. Brutal, man. I've never seen valet girls, at least a group of them, cut a such a scathing promo on someone as they came in.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like I said, you know, they're all, it's like, that's how it is. They're always screaming. You're gonna get killed. Yeah.
I hope you brought your mama. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Oh, in the line where like, ooh, I like your outfit. Did your husband buy it for you?
And then they change the audio, or they change the dialogue in the next meme cut, and it's like, you're not with the progressive movement these days, Spider-Man. LGBT community, blah blah blah. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't.
Never mind then. Yeah. Obviously, one of the most notable moments in any Spider-Man movie is the final swing sequence, right?
When he's doing the at the very end, doing the pose,
it's an exhilarating moment, yeah. Very cool.
Oh, and speaking of characters who are coming back for that fucking movie, J. Jonah Jameson's entire thing. I didn't put him in characters. He's not a major character, right. But I did like, you know, he's got the beats going. He's like very very loud and abrasive. You know, like,
ooh. He actually has hair.
His hair. Oh yeah, he is kind of bald at the end.
Not kinda. Definitely not kinda.
But then, you know, he shows he has a little heart by refusing to reveal that Peter is the photographer when Goblin invades. So, oh look, maybe he's not so bad after all, doing that whole thing. And this last one is just like, yeah, every Goblin / Norman Osborn scene is fucking great. And I mean, hey, some of this is memes now, you know? I'm somewhat of a scientist. It's like minutes in too.
Yeah,
I was surprised. I'm like, oh shit, that's where it is. Like the way he does that one, and when he at the board meeting.
Back to formula.
What was that? I didn't.
Back to formula.
Oh yeah. And I think my favorite is when he just randomly goes, "You know how much I sacrificed, Max? Please, please don't fire me, please." See, he's great.
That Ric Flair, man. It's the Ric Flair.
Good stuff.
Something I do want to point out. One of the key scenes that I saw that really, I think it was not only just a really hype and interesting scene on camera. I think it highlighted the character of Peter Parker and his morality there. But it's when Goblin has the sadistic choice making of save MJ or save literally a tram full of children. Like, wow, that's great. And then as they're falling, you get a shot of both falling within each lens of Spider-Man's costume.
Oh yeah, you're right. Oh, I wrote that one. I wrote that on my phone. I forgot to put that one in. That was a good shot.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then I think that also speaks to the character. Like, not only does he have to make this decision, but he's seeing both sides, and he goes to save both, because that's what
that's what you gotta try to do.
Yeah, that's what the hero would do, right?
It's the whole in the anime where, oh no, there's no.
Being another a loser. Which I think is important, yeah. At least for the origin story of Peter, right?
Yeah, I think that was another difference I was thinking, comparing him to Holland. I don't feel like he's a big enough, like, Holland's Spider-Man is a big enough nerd / loser.
I think he's definitely a nerd, maybe not as much of a loser.
I think that's fair.
That's kind of something I had, an issue I had with Garfield's Spider-Man, is I don't think he was really that much of a loser.
Looks very pretty, not gonna lie. At least in my honest opinion.
No, I think that's what a lot of people say.
Yeah, because like I think both Toby and Tom have like the you know, the hair where it's like very nerdy looking, for lack of a.
And then Garfield's is like up and styled.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I mean like Garfield's I think when he was Spider-Man, he was like styling. You know what I mean? Like, let's ignore the costume from the first movie because that one was kind of lame. But I think when he was, when he was actively portraying Spider-Man on screen, I thought it was kind of like you were reading it in the comic. If I had to explain it.
Okay. I don't think I completely get it, but you know.
Oh. Okay, here. Like one time. This was in the second movie, but Spider-Man was stopping a gas stop or a convenience store robbery, but he had a cold. So he was dressed up in a Spider-Man costume, but over it he had the what's it called? The beanie, then he had the sweater vest.
I think I know that scene.
Yeah, yeah. And then like he's sneezing like I'm Spider-Man.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that's good.
You don't want to put over the New York scene when they're like, oh, you mess with one
of them. Oh, yeah, no. I called that out that they're going to do. Hey, yo, yeah, you don't mess with New York, man. You don't mess with New York, you'll mess with Spider-Man.
I mean, honestly, though, Spider-Man is pretty much synonymous with New York, right? So it wouldn't make sense to not include that aspect.
I think he is the New York because Batman has fake city Gotham City. Superman's got a Metropolis or whatever.
Metrocity.
Metropolis.
I liked how New York's characterized more in Holland's movies. Like when he goes to the local delis or he's harassing the New Yorkers.
Part of the community.
But then he doesn't do any of that shit in the following movie, but that's whatever, I guess.
He's far from home?
Fuck you.
I mean, it is set in like Europe or whatever.
Let's get into these FX.
FX. Well, personally, I thought some of the shots were
doesn't
like,
age okay, too this, well.
This is a 20-year-old movie. Yeah,
like maybe and when I they guess... had those parade floats and it didn't really look in, they didn't look like they belonged in the shot.
Yeah, some of it, but I guess I'll forgive it. Maybe the question is, I think one of the main reasons why we're going back to this, does it hold up? Some of the CG, not really. Does it really detract from the movie or the storytelling? I don't think so. It doesn't look god awful. Yeah, no, it doesn't look terrible. It doesn't look like some other 3D.
It's not X arm
that we.
You got to bring it back.
You know, it's passable. You know, so I think it does a decent.
I think also if you give it in the lens of 2002, it's not as awful.
Exactly. Yeah, with the context, yeah, look, I'm sure it was fine. I think the overall effects. Actually, yeah, there were some other. Like some scene transitions I'm thinking of, specifically the one where he goes to kidnap Spider-Man from the is it Daily Bugle, Daily Planet? Which Daily is it?
Daily Bugle.
Because I know Superman also works at a news
place. Daily Planet.
What the fuck? And then you see when after he drugs Spider-Man and then he glides off with the smoke of the glider, like ooh, it covers the screen and then it transitions to. The top, or I think it's after the burning building where the flames transition up to the next scene. I really like those.
Actually, speaking of, I like how you mentioned that because there's also another scene transition I want to put over. It was when Green Goblin murdered all the army people, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was like shrapnel flying into the air, and then the next to match the shrapnel. And the next scene transition, it transitioned to like the graduation caps being thrown in the air.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And as a effect, it was kind of cool. But then thinking about it, like that's a little kind of a dark jump going from what's it called? Literal people getting murdered hard, super hard to, oh, hey, graduation.
Yeah. But life's unfair. I don't want to keep saying that.
I mean, I don't think it was bad. It was just. It was just a little off-putting.
And I would say that's how it be sometimes. You know, you gotta take the good with the bad. You know. Yeah. And I guess other things about the effects. I mean, thoughts on the suit we talked about it in the beginning. So I never really understood. I didn't think about it until rewatching it. Like, yeah, the webbing. Like, what made it distinct? This Raimi Spider-Man versus other Spider-Mans is the raised webbing effect. And my theory is like, ooh, they. Did it so the character would pop out more versus just having it be 2D lines. And I think, you know, I think it works well. It's very striking.
No, I think it's a cool suit. It's very reminiscent of that early 2000s superhero movies, because I feel like around that time, a lot of movies were going for more, a lot of superhero movies, that is, were going for a more realistic and grounded look. Like, for example, if you ever see any of those 2000s X-Men movies, none of the characters really are dressed like how they were in the comics, right? Like, Wolverine doesn't have the mask with the ears pointed up, right? No, he just has a black suit and his hair is like that. You know what I mean? And I know that happens in the comics as well, but they don't go to the whole suit.
Yeah, no, I think I'm a fan. And also, I forgot that, oh yeah, the wrestling suit, he's wearing a hoodie. I'm like, Jesus, he loves taking out the hoodie. So many fucking versions of Spider-Man. Ben Reilly, even Tom Holland brings out the hoodie in the first
yeah,
movie.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a... Hey, you know what? He's from New York. You know?
Wow.
It's cold. Yeah. Gotta have layers. Some shit. Fucking Spectacular Spider-Man. I remember he was like, yo, I gotta get a fucking... It's cold.
Oh, what's it called?
I don't know. I don't know what it's
thermals,
like to be cold.
Thermals. Anymore. You don't know? Yeah, you live in Las Vegas. Yeah, he needs a thermal spider wear.
Anyway, that's all I got for effects. Anything else to add?
No, let's wrap it up.
Let us wrap it up. So, you know, overall, no, I really enjoyed this movie. You know, I wasn't really sure how I'd feel about it, especially with the new stuff. I think it actually holds up fairly well for being as old as it is. And I think it does.
Yeah, it's almost itself. 20 years.
Yeah, and I think it distinguishes itself from, enough from the MCU Spider-Man stuff to kind of hold up on its own. I really do enjoy a lot of the performances. You know, Tobey Maguire and Willem Dafoe are great in their roles. The action scenes, I don't really talk about that much about the action scenes. They were there. They were
They were amazing.
They're incredible.
They were ultimate. Damn it.
But no, I think it's definitely worth a check out if you're a fan of current Spider-Man.
The question I want to pose to you is this a movie you can enjoy without being a superhero movie fan?
No, I think so, because it does tell a story that you could find in like a lot of other movies, downtrodden youth on... Down on his luck, which I just said twice, I guess, saying he's downtrodden, but you know, coming to terms with growing up and learning responsibility and stuff, and you know, maybe some of the stuff is kind of hokey. Oh yeah, actually, I do remember there was like a particular scene. It's when he's looking at the car ad, and then there's like a musical twang, and then MJ's face shows up. It's like smiling, like, oh look, this is what you're gonna see this if you buy a car. That was really fucking cheesy. Oh my god.
You know, the funny thing is he never buys a car.
He never does buy the car, because he doesn't need to win her over with materialism or showing off.
He just needs to dump her ass at the next funeral. Is all it is.
Hey, you know, the only thing I know about too is that I'm pretty sure doesn't it open with like them in a cafe together? It'll be fine. It'll work out.
No, it doesn't open like that.
Well, it does a scene though like that, right?
There is a scene.
I think I've only seen the trailer for that movie. So.
Well, I'm excited for when we actually do it. No, it opens with. Do you want to know how it opens?
Yeah, I'll find out when we watch it. We'll watch it.
Okay.
I liked it enough. So you know, I think you can enjoy it. I mean, I know there's just some people who are just put off by, you know, superheroes and spandex and shit. But I think behind all that, behind the mask, there's a good story, a timeless story, really, to be found here.
I couldn't agree more. No, I think there's enough responsible storytelling done here. Like it's not just like they left a bunch of loose
powerful,
ends.
Is
right?
It powerful too?
Oh god, I was trying. That was not what I was going for. But no, there's an actual story to follow here, and likable characters and an interesting plot. So I agree with you. It's a good superhero movie, and I would say it's just a good movie.
Yeah, definitely holds up. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that might wrap it up for Spotterpod on Spider-Man 02, Sam Raimi version. Go check it out if you haven't. Check us out. Maybe listen to some of our other episodes, our other thoughts on various
topics. No, not maybe. You should check it out.
I'm sure we've covered something that you know, you're interested in. Well, plenty of topics to sate your palate, if you will. What the fuck? Whatever, do the outro.
But hey, folks, you know what we always say? We're not a weekly podcast, but we pretend to be.
See ya.